Hey there, I'm Ryan Weiss, founder and CEO of EPS. We are all about spotlighting leaders who bring vision and clarity to their teams. At EPS, we help you eliminate the chaos of bad handoffs and the frustration of employees between departments. We focus on increasing revenue and efficiency while making life easier for your team and customers. If you found this content compelling, join us at opticsinaction.com. Apply to be a guest and share your insights as a leader with vision and clarity. Hello and welcome back everyone to another episode of Optics in Action, where we spotlight leaders with vision and clarity. And today I'm honored to have Josh Tarbutton. Josh is the founder and CEO of an organization called Bravo Team. We're going to learn a little bit more about what that is and how they work to create value for clients in a little bit here. So welcome to this episode, Josh. It's a pleasure to have you here.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
So thanks for taking the time today. The first question I always ask clients, and not clients, but the folks who come on the podcast are, why do you do what you do? Before we get into what Bravo Team is and what you do and how you do it, let's talk about why you do it. Why did you found this? Why are you passionate about what Bravo Team does?
Yeah, I would say my why, there's probably a couple major themes. Design and engineering or engineering design is one of them. Innovation is the second, you know, the ability to create. I think the first one, it leads to the second one. And then the third one is people. So I think most of my life has been spent on those three things. The first part was mostly the engineering, and that turned into fascination with the design process. And I was fortunate to have some very good professors at the university, Josh Summers, and got to connect with David Ullman later in life. And the third passion is people, because I think, you know, you can't do anything without people.
Yeah. So I love it. So design, innovation, and people. And you mentioned in there kind of the process that brings all of that stuff together and how those things link together. So tell me a little bit about what Bravo Team does. We were talking earlier about it, and I imagine Bravo Team has something to do with the name, has something to do with your previous engagements in the military and things like that. I imagine there's some connection there.
Yes.
But tell us a little bit about what your team does. So you've got quite a team of people. You're doing design and innovation. Tell us a little bit about what that looks like for Bravo Team.
I would say it's mostly in support of making things, usually manufacturing or a manufacturing OEM. And it could be automotive, or it could be the food service, or it could also be just maybe a local company that needs innovation for their, maybe they want to introduce a new product line. We can help with all those. We have about 2/3 mechanical. We have a little over 30 engineers. Of the mechanicals, I'd say probably half are on the sort of mechatronics side. The other half, you know, controls, automation, mechatronics. The other half are more on the like classical mechanics, design, gears, bearings, structures, fluids, forces, all that stuff, thermals. Other third is computer and electrical. And we do a lot of PCB design. We do a lot of firmware development. We do app development, mostly related to, I would say, more industrial products, sort of like remote monitoring, or, you know, taking older components that don't have data acquisition, or what people used to call telemetry, but people don't really use that word anymore, kind of upgrade their products, if you would, to what the consumer expects. And I'd say there's a number of projects like that. But I'd say we're kind of project agnostic in a sense. And we're also hardware agnostic. We're mostly software agnostic. And we are, but we do have faith, and our faith is in that design process. And so we'll use whatever tools available, whatever the right tool is. We try to get a real good understanding of what the customer defines as success. And sometimes it's mainly the timeline. Sometimes it's mainly the cost. And so, you know, those are often driven by design. And so we just try to listen and give people what they want.
That's awesome. So as you, and I don't want to get into the politics of it, but the tariffs are creating some disruption in global supply chains right now. So as you look at that type of thing, and you're talking a lot about manufacturing and gears and bearings and and innovation and products and manufacturing and go-to-market strategies. As you think about some of those things, are you starting to see some reshoring activities? Are you start even with COVID, right? There was this disruption in global supply chain. When those types of things happen, how do you see that impacting American manufacturing, reshoring of maybe supply chains and things like that? How does that play into what you're doing?
Yeah, it is definitely a dynamic in the marketplace. It's undeniable. We don't have a long line of people standing outside to onshore right now. I mean, I can peek, but we do have some, but we've also been doing onshoring for years. We can make quite a few things. We can give the numbers on what it would cost. And some, you know, it's largely driven by assembly costs. I think that's where the competition globally is mostly concentrated. I would also say there's very good groups of designers globally. You know, some countries are really good with certain aspects of, you know, design or services already. We have been onshoring customers in the past. It was because of somewhat of a compromised supply chain during COVID. We certainly saw the supply chain dry up. We had to really pivot our designs, like many other companies. Fortunately, you know, the difference between us and some other companies, maybe they don't have all of the ability to do the design. So for one example for that we had is, you know, we had a chip that was part of a product that we invented, which is a dog collar, the BravoWalk. And it trains your dog not to pull on a leash. And one of the chips that we had in there, we needed to replace. And so we had to redesign it against what was available. And then we had to kind of scurry in the marketplace and find the parts. And all these third-party websites were hoarding parts and gouging people. And so we used those. We used eBay and we used what we could to put things together to provide that function. Often, you know, if you can't get what you need, you can kind of be like, you know, MacGyver and try to look around and see what you have and what you can do with it. But it's scary for a lot of people. I think, you know, the businesses that are impacted the most are those that rely on the margin of imported products. And Right. Those companies, and there's a lot of them, a lot of retail is going to get hit, you know, it's going to be affected, which is going to drive the consumer price index up. And so I think it's all connected. I'll be honest, I was a mechanical engineering professor. So I don't fully understand the economics, but I definitely see them in whatever is going on play out and how, where I can find components, but I'm pretty good at finding things.
Yeah. So, and it's something you've built quite a team to be able to do some of those things. So I was going to ask you, so you mentioned about the dog collar and that dog collar innovation. I might have a connection for you that might be interesting there. Another former military vet who has built a dog training franchise business, and he's got franchises all over the country. So it might be a connection for us to talk about offline.
Oh, yeah. We're terrible at sales, so any bone you want to throw the dog walking business, that'd be great.
Fantastic. So I was going to ask, are you able to share some of the innovations or some of the products or technologies? I'm sure you've got confidentiality agreements and stuff, so I don't want to breach any of those, but are you able to share any of the some examples of projects or types of products that you've worked on in the past that might give our listeners some idea?
We have designed high precision machines that can hold positional tolerances over 5 axes on the order of microns, so 10 to the minus 6 meters. And we have designed machines that automatically mark objects with lasers on both sides as they go through a process. We have done a lot of automation, and there'd be like end of line tests. So when a product gets all the way to the end, you know, how do we know it's good? We've designed a lot of test and measurement where a customer needs to characterize maybe the performance of something they've designed. So we can take their artifacts or their subcomponent, and we can help them understand where it is. And we've also done a handful of consumer products that are out there, which you might recognize some of them, but I don't believe we're allowed to say sure. that we can't take credit for their products, but there's a number of consumer products out there as well.
So common things that we may have used, but you're not able to talk about. So I completely get that and appreciate and respect that. I think in the design and innovation community, for sure, one of my clients, we were talking about their innovation strategy and products and technologies, and they were like, we don't want any AI recording any of these meetings. And largely because they're like, we don't know where that data is going. And we've got, this is an innovation in our strategy for the future and the way we go to market. So completely respect that you may not be able to talk about all the things you're working on. So let's take a different direction here a little bit with I like to talk about the intersection of people and process. So I kind of have two themes. One is that great people without process get frustrated. So if you've got great people, but you don't have a good design process, you don't have a good innovation process, then those people will get frustrated. The customers get frustrated, engineers get frustrated, people get frustrated. The corollary or the sort of the parallel to that is that a great process without people is wasted. You can make amazing what you perceive or what I perceive as engineers to be amazing processes, but if people don't follow them or people don't engage with them or it doesn't make sense to the people doing them, then it's completely wasted. So people without process get frustrated. Process without people is wasted. So tell me a little bit about your experience. Do you have any sort of experience or thoughts on the intersection of people and process as it relates to design and innovation and working with clients and working with engineers and making all that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, coming from academia, I assumed a lot about business. And I know that these podcasts come out, some of my people listen to them and they'll be the first to say that Josh is a clever fella, but I do kind of fall more into the nutty professor category than the well-organized category. So process is something I would say I largely underappreciated when we first started, and only through the pain of the ensuing chaos did I begin to appreciate it. Now, it's funny because in the design process, I feel very strongly about the order and the steps and, when can you purchase something? When can you, how can this part of the design move forward when this design is still in limbo? What is the right timing for moving on and sealing a design? As designers, we want to stay in an infinite loop of, we can make it better. There's that tendency, in all of us. And also, when you make something and you put it out into the world, there's the vulnerability that, hey, somebody's going to see something. And so I think there's an inherent tendency, both psychologically, but also by the nature of a lot of engineers, they want to get things, where they could be, where they should be. And I think so that part of knowing when to move through those steps of the process, I'd say we excel at. But where we struggle is sort of the more obvious stuff. It's like when, a lead comes in, do we have all of the steps explicitly defined so that there's no wasted time and we're not having unnecessary meetings with information that would have been easier to obtain? And so for me, I didn't fully appreciate process until, kind of like swimming in chaos. And as a leader, you're usually...
I love that, swimming in chaos. That's a great great statement right there. I like it.
We're not swimming in chaos now, but we have tamed much of it. But we have, I think process improvement is something you can't ever stop.
I love some of the sort of articulation that you shared in that, starting with that swimming in chaos, but understanding that's not where you are today. But sometimes we jump into the deep end of a pool and we don't have a process prepared for something. And learning through failure, learning through refining through failure, refining through the fire becomes an essential part of what we do and how we innovate, right? Innovation is not always clean. It's not always a point A to point B, right? Yeah. In fact, a lot of innovation doesn't do anything like that. It goes in swirlies and all over the place. And it comes back to, yeah, you know what? This could work. And if innovation was easy, then everybody would do it. It sounds like you've assembled quite a creative, artistic engineering group that's able to navigate some of those challenges and opportunities to step through the framework of kind of key steps on that path to innovation. Am I describing that right?
Absolutely.
Does that resonate, or am I missing something in there?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think. And you know, going back to the people part of it is, you know, people are frustrated without process. Mm-hmm. And when you hire the kind of people that we have, you know, when we first started, there's 30 engineers now. When we first started the company, I could walk into a room, I could say, hey guys, you know, I could look at something, what about this? And they say, oh, you're so smart, it's a great idea, you know. And now I walk into the room, they're like, yeah, we thought about that. This is why it won't work. Do you need something? So it's not harsh like that. I mean, the guys are great, but sure. But they are pretty independent. But the pain that really came mostly from how we were organized. And so what we try to do is pretty challenging because we do cross-disciplinary projects. They're almost always involve software, hardware, mechanical design, and electrical design. Almost all of our products now. I mean, even our trash cans have, you know, sensors on them and open for us. And we have to have what we call T people. It's a very agile way of thinking. It's like, you know, inherited from Scrum. So I've worked with David Ullman a little bit on agile for hardware. And I would say that, you know, a lot of the frustrations that we've had is not organizing the team and decision-making the best. And incidentally, we've landed on something that's kind of like, it's very similar to how a military unit might operate. So we have a pretty flat organization that is organized into small teams that are T people. And T people are people that have, you know, the depth. So it's kind of like your vertical dimension, and you have your horizontal dimension, which is your breadth. And so we try to be real careful to hire people. Obviously, we're hiring a younger person. We don't expect them to be too deep or too wide, but we do expect them to have the desire to learn. And that fire to grow. And if we can do that well, you can pair maybe a shallow T with a deep T, and the shallow T gets bigger, like in record time. It's incredible to watch. And that dynamic, you know, between a more experienced, you know, engineer and a younger engineer to learn through the work as they contribute and learn. And often, you know, the younger person might end up doing some of the tasks that are not as exciting to the older person, but because they're learning, some of those less interesting tasks are still interesting enough because they're acquiring those skills and that speed to move at the velocity of the work. And when we get that right on the team, there's, in my opinion, there's very few things more fascinating to see. So I feel like that's actually something that we finally landed on this year. But I would say we've had teams like this all along, with different forms. But as the company grows, you know, $1 million company has different processes than a $5 million company than a $10 million company. And as we've gone through those milestones, all of the processes have to change. Not all of them, but many.
Yeah, things have to evolve as you grow and as you go through those stages, don't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we've definitely experienced that no process frustration and also the process without people problem.
So you've been on this journey from the military to being a professor to being a very successful entrepreneur. And as you've gone on that journey, what's something that you've learned that you would share with your younger self or with another person who's going down the path of, you know, becoming an entrepreneur one day? What's something that you've learned, one or two things that really made an impact on the way you lead today and the why you're successful as you have been?
I would say a major theme is that relationships are often more important than being right. And for me, recognizing that the ego is kind of the story I tell the world. And if I get wrapped up in my own storytelling of myself in the world, then I don't always see myself so clearly or my behaviors so clearly. And I think having good people around you is essential to allow yourself to be protected from your blind spots.
Wow. I love that. I love that wisdom. So my background, I got degrees in chemistry and finance. So I'm like technical guy, right? And when I first started in the chemical industry, I'm like, I'm going to solve the world's problems through chemistry and finance. Like, we're going to make an impact. And what I did when I ran smack into a wall of, if you don't engage people, if you don't surround yourself with the right people, if you don't get the right people on board, nothing happens. Nothing. And that's that process without people gets wasted. You can know everything you want about finance and chemistry and physics and mechanical engineering. If you don't engage the right people, nothing happens.
Yeah. Who, not how, right? Who, not how. People are what make life worth it. And, you know, I don't think, you know, some of us may want to be the richest person all alone in a mansion on a hill on an ocean far away from everybody. And I can honestly say that didn't sound too bad to me when I was younger. But I think, like, I don't think happiness is ever defined without the context of people. And I like what they say, you know, I'm a big fan of EO and Vern Harnish. I went through the accelerator program, which changed my life. If you make over $250,000, you're eligible and you get paired with an entrepreneur that's been successful enough to be a coach and they help you scale, but they focus on strategy, execution, cash, and people. And they say strategy is revenue, execution is profit, cash is cash. Only one way to measure it. You go look at the bank account. You can't count credit cards or loan or line of credit or anything. Cash is cash. And then number four, people is happiness. People is happiness. And I think, you know, EO was real instrumental when I first started the company just to recognize like how important it was. But as a professor, I wasn't especially sensitive to how I made people feel. And so that's been sort of the journey after. And I recently read a Forbes article is talking about green flags. You know, we talk about red flags in relationships, but a green flag, they said, is when you have conflict. And at the other side of it, you're able to own your own behavior and extend grace to each other and realize like, hey, this stuff happens when we're trying to do hard things, especially when you're trying to do hard things, you know, our emotions get heavily involved, but to be able to go through hard things, to, you know, to say things you probably shouldn't have said, to get excited or whatever, and, you know, and be able to come back and say, look, you know, I screwed up, I'm sorry. And for them to say it's okay. And or vice versa, it's a green flag. And yeah. I think sometimes we think, oh, we had conflict, now we all have to run away. You know, I'm the CEO, I started this company, you know, screw them. But it's like there's no way to go. There's no way to go.
I love that perspective. I mean, you know, a great mentor in my life once shared that when we genuinely care about other people, we'll go through conflict and we'll come out the other side. Our relationship may even be stronger than it was going in. And the people we care the most about in our lives, maybe our spouses or our children, there's times when we have conflict and we come out the other side of it and we say, okay, we went through that, but we're here, we're committed to making something work. And that's really what makes life worthwhile.
And I'll say that, like, you know, with what you're talking about process is like, why do process, right? So we don't want to frustrate, you know, no process. You framed it in the context of, you know, frustration, for people, right? But often, a lot of times, I feel like people institute process to control people or to drive profits. And those are all, I mean, legitimate business reasons. I mean, a business, if they don't make a profit, right, they can't pay the people and that's not good for the people. Right. But if the business thinks of process in terms of empowering people and removing frustration, and if they think of it really as like a people first activity, I think some of the resistance to getting help with processes can be diminished, because you're really it's like an employee benefit to give people clarity. It's a basic need that we all need. We need to be successful. We need to look at our week and look back and say, hey, we had a good week. And if And a lot of that is how, you know, the leadership defines success. Yeah. And if I can define success against, you know, healthy business metrics that are like designed to help people work in harmony for their benefit, then we have, I think, the right processes in place.
Yeah. One thing came to mind as you were sharing some of that. So there was a gentleman, W. Edwards Deming, who talked. The Deming Institute. I think like last time I checked, this was like the quote on their front page of their website is that a bad system will beat a good person every time. And when you really start to absorb and think about that, he's not saying that systems are more important or that systems, the process should be used to control people or anything like that. What he's saying is, and when you really think about the meaning of that, a bad system will beat a good person every time. What he's saying is that if you have a bad system, if you have a bad process, and you hire in, you attract and you hire in the best employee, like this is an amazing employee, and you have terrible onboarding systems and your processes are frustrated, and like you're going to chew them up and spit them out. You go and you attract the ideal client. You say, this is the client. Wow, this is like the best client. We've been going after this golden goose for decades and we built our business to get this project. If you have bad processes for onboarding that client, you're going to chew them up and spit them out, right? If you have great vendors, you're like, we've got great vendor partners that collaborate with us to bring innovation to the market. But you've got bad processes for dealing with vendors. You could have the ideal vendor. You chew them up. You spit them out. So that, you know, bad process or bad system will beat a good person every time. He's not saying that people are less important. What he's saying is people are the most important thing. And you want to have good systems and good processes to enable them to melt the frustration away so that they can perform to the level that they're capable of performing to.
Yeah. Well, he said it better.
for sure. Well, listen, Josh, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on this episode of Optics in Action. How do people learn more about you, learn more about Bravo Team? I'm sure that folks have innovation ideas or manufacturing clients, you know, potential clients. Like, how do they learn more about you and what you're doing with Bravo Team?
Yeah, and thank you for having me and for the work that you're doing with work streams. I think it's very important. We're pretty easy to get in touch with. I have a weird last name. You could start there, Josh Tarbutton. You'll find me, or you can go to jtarbutton.com. Not 100% sure the website is up yet, or just come to our company website, www.bravoteam.tech. I was too cheap when I started the company to buy .com, but it was because it was $8,000, but I did buy it later. But that's why we're .tech. I also thought it was kind of cool, but now I end up explaining it every time I talk about it. If you're interested in the dog collar, you can go to Chewy or Amazon or www.bravowalk.com. And yeah, we'd love to hear from you. If you have any innovation needs, we can always look at it and say we can't help, but we love to look and would love to help.
Fantastic. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on this episode of Optics in Action, where we spotlight leaders with vision and clarity. And it is clear from the team that you're building there at bravoteam.tech that you have vision, you've pulled this together, and you've got innovation and design, and you've got clarity of where you're going and how you're leading. And I think that self-reflection that you've shared is really important for any entrepreneur, any leader to be thinking about. So thanks again for being on this episode of Optics in Action.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ryan.
Hey there. My name is Ryan Weiss, and I am the host of the Optics in Action podcast, where we spotlight visionary leaders who bring clarity and innovation to their industries. If you are interested in being a guest, or if you know someone who would be, you can find more information about the podcast and listen to previous episodes at opticsinaction.com. We'd be thrilled to have you on the show and can't wait to hear your story.